episode 622 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace.
I'm Manny.
And this is the New Comics Wednesday episode for December 5th, 2018. I can't believe it's December already, man. This year went by really fast.
You know, the sad thing is every week I tell myself, you need to start making a list because at the end of the year, when you guys do your recap episode, you're not going to remember everything.
Yep.
And I'm like, yeah, I'll do it. And then I'm like, ah, damn it. I'm going to have to do it for the whole year now.
Yeah, I used to do that too. I used to write down all the books that I either that I read every week or that I wanted to read. That way, if I didn't get to something, I at least would have a list. And I have one going back to like, I want to say 2015 was the first year I started doing it. So I have one for 2015, 16, 17, and I don't think I ever started one for 2018. So I'm kind of in the same boat. I'm going to have to go back and look at like a release list for each month of the year or each Wednesday of the year and like go back and really need to get started on that sooner than later. But yeah, I just can't believe how fast the year went by, man. I mean, I did so many conventions this year, but it really seems like San Diego was just last week. New York Comic Con was already 2 months ago, and that feels like it was just yesterday too. So I can't believe how fast the year went by. But I did look up real quick on my documents, and I have – I don't know. Maybe I think I did 2015, but I think it was on the laptop that got stolen. So I just looked on here. I have 2016, 2017, and I do have a document for 2018, but it only has the first 3 weeks of the year. So I still need to rebuild that one so I can go back and think about what I read this year and what I want to give my awards to. So anyway, how many books do you have to mention tonight? I don't have the list in front of me.
Let me see. I have Green Arrow 47, Red Hood and the Outlaws 29, Batman 60, Crowded number 5, and Border Town number 4.
All right, so you have 5. I have 6, so I guess I'll go first. The first book I'll mention, just because it's first on my list here to open up, is Green Lantern number 2. Had to talk about this one. You know, I'm reading Green Lantern despite the fact that Grant Morrison is writing it, and I'm not a Grant Morrison fan at all. But the fact that it's Green Lantern, who's one of my favorite characters, and then the fact that it's Liam Sharp, who is not only one of my favorite artists, but one of my favorite people, I'm like, I have to pick it up. I mean, I have to. And I will say that although the first issue was strange and a little weird, it's kind of what you come to expect from Grant Morrison, that the second issue was better than the first, in my opinion. And I'm not saying that the first one was bad. It's just, it's not my particular cup of tea. I don't care for the style of Grant Morrison. I think that he gets too weird and too out there. And I don't particularly enjoy it because I like to really understand what's going on in a comic. And I like to be able to, you know, think about it and break it down and dissect it. And Morrison gets out there with all these abstract ideas and it just makes it hard to follow. So in the second issue, he certainly builds on things from the first issue, and it makes some of the things in the first issue make more sense. And just on its own, the second issue, like, you don't even necessarily have to read the first issue. I read it a couple times, and then in reading the second issue, I'm thinking back to stuff that happened in the first issue and saying, yeah, that makes more sense. But also in the context, it really doesn't. I'm not saying the first issue doesn't matter, but if you missed the first issue, you could easily pick up this issue and understand what's going on. The first issue was so much set up in a way, and I don't really feel like it had much in the way of story progression. The second issue has a lot more story progression. So then after reading issue 2, it gives you perspective on one that you can then, like, I feel more like I understand issue 1 better now, and then I get more out of issue 1. If I went back and read issue 1 for a third time, I'd probably get even more out of it now because I have some more context because of what happened in issue 2. That being said, I mentioned Liam Sharp as one of my favorite artists. This second issue, I want to say it's not quite as detailed as the first, but that's not necessarily true, because there are a couple of pages that are super detailed. There's one particularly of Planet Oa that is like, Liam, what did you do? You spent like far too much time on this one page, and then you didn't put as much detail in the rest of the art. And that's not to say it's bad art at all. No, it's spectacular art. And I love the emotion. I love the choices that Liam makes. I love the way he lays out panels on a page, and I love the way he lays out everything within the panels. I don't know that there's too many people that do it better when it comes to positioning the camera within a panel and being kind of cinematic. And I don't mean cinematic in the way that's like widescreen like Brian Hitch does, but I mean with like a almost like a director's eye, right, where he draws your eye to a particular thing based on how he sets up the characters in the panels. And he's just a master storyteller. So I do recommend Green Lantern. I think after reading a couple issues, I mean, honestly, after the first issue, I was like, I'm going to stay because it's Green Lantern and because it's Liam, but I don't know how much I'm going to enjoy the story. After reading the second issue, I feel like I'm kind of engaged now. Morrison has managed to pull me in to some extent. And I think I'm going to enjoy it a lot more than I initially thought I was going to after the first issue. And as I say that, I realize I didn't give the creative team, I sort of roundabout did, but I want to make sure I give everybody credit. So as I mentioned, issue 2 written by Grant Morrison. We've got Liam Sharp handling the art. Steve Olaf is the colorist. Tom Orzechowski is handling the letters. We've got Liam and Steve on the cover, and then a Francisco Martino variant cover. So that's my first book, Green Lantern number 2. All right, Manny, what do you have up first?
Up first, I'm going to go with Crowded number 5 from Image. And if I could just get all the way back to the top. It's written by Christopher Sabella. With pencils by Rose Stain, inked by Ted Brandt, and colors by Triona Farrell. So we're 5 issues into this series where Charlie has randomly been selected as somebody through this app to be killed. And pretty much the premise is that, if you haven't been following this title, is that there's an app that you can, it's like a GoFundMe type deal where if it gains enough backers, you can set a one-time hit on somebody. And for whatever reason, this girl has a $1 million hit on her, and she hires, and just like there's an app for, to put a hit on somebody, there's also one for bodyguards. In this case, there's a 1.4 star bodyguard. Vita has been taking care of her throughout these issues. I love the book, the first few issues, but now with issue 5, I'm really feeling like I wanted a little bit more to develop in this issue. It's just getting a little repetitive, the way that they're just running around LA, avoiding different mobs of people who are trying to collect on the bounty. It does start a little bit interesting with the perspective of one of the people who's actually trying to kill her, and the reasons why. And the reason why this particular girl is trying to kill Charlie and pick up the bounty is because she needs the money for her dream wedding. So that's her personal reasoning for it. And that's a really funny exchange. But other than that, the setup for one of the other characters, Trotter, who's apparently like a master bounty hunter, He uses it to do like YouTube videos, and he trends, and he has followers and whatever. It seems a little slow to develop. And then I just find Charlie's character a little bit inconsistent, because and sometimes she's like, why is everybody trying to kill me? I don't understand, blah, blah, blah. And then another time she's just being super sassy and running away from a bounty hunter, being very, very careless. And I'm kind of confused as to what, you know, what her role is and what she did to, because obviously there's going to be a twist where you find out eventually why everybody's trying to kill her, which she's keeping to herself. And so it's getting a little repetitive, because it's just kind of the same thing over and over again. With that said, by the end of the issue, things do move a little bit forward, but with issue 6, I really hope it picks up a little bit more. So issue 5, a little disappointing for me in a series that I've enjoyed otherwise.
Yeah, I think I read the first 2 or 3 issues, and I do want to get caught up on it, so I can't really speak to it feeling repetitive. But I will say, as far as Charlie goes, yeah, her she's real up and down, kind of bipolar. That was from the beginning. I mean, even in the first issue, yeah, she's like that. In the second issue, when she, you know, after Vita tells her, don't, whatever you do, don't use your phone, don't let people know where we are, and then she turns around and does it. Yeah, she doesn't seem to be the smartest when it comes to her own survival. She's kind of annoying. So I don't know, that's just my take on it. But yeah, it has been an enjoyable series. I definitely need to get caught up.
Yeah. Her bounty's over $2 million now.
Yeah, maybe people want her dead just because she's annoying. I don't know.
You know, I have this feeling that it's going to be something like she was walking or something, and she tripped over some billionaire's like project or something, and that's why they want her dead. Like, it's going to be something where she's like, oh, that's what, I don't know. It just, based on personality, it's going to be something dumb at the end, but you don't know. I mean, it's being developed already as a movie.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it got picked up by, as a matter of fact, they're having at the end of the book, in the back, it shows some photos where they're meeting with, we have it here. Let me, Rebel Wilson, I think her name is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she's the one who's working on the project.
You know what? Now that you mentioned that, I think I did see something about Rebel Wilson. Christopher Sabella was tweeting about that and showing some pictures of Rebel and him together talking about the book. So I imagine it must be her production company that optioned it then.
Yes, it is.
And so I imagine she's going to want to play Charlie, huh?
It's a good fit.
I'm not a fan of Rebel Wilson at all, so I probably wouldn't go see that. But that's just me. So anyway, on to my next book. It's Shazam! #1 from writer Jeff Johns. Art is by Dale Eaglesham. Colors are by Mark Atiye. I don't know if I'm saying that right. It's Atiyeh. Letters by Rob Lee. We've got a cover from Dale Eaglesham and Alex Sinclair, and then a variant cover from Gary Frank and Brad Anderson. Now, I never read the backup Shazam stories in the New 52 Justice League when Jeff Johns was writing it. I wish that I had, because I would understand this context a little more. I've always been a fan of Captain Marvel. I mean, I know that technically he's called Shazam now, but he was the first Captain Marvel until, you know, Fawcett was sold to DC, and then DC let the copyright on the name, or the trademark rather, on the name expire, and then Marvel trademarked the name, and now they've got their Captain Marvel, who's about to have a movie come out. And DC could have kept calling their character Captain Marvel if they wanted, but they couldn't have put out a title. They couldn't have put out a comic called Captain Marvel. So over the years, they've done various things, Power of Shazam and other things to keep it from infringing on the trademark. And then finally, they just said, forget it. We're just going to start calling the character Shazam rather than Captain Marvel. So I don't really go in for that. I think that he should still be called Captain Marvel. But anyway, you know, smarter people than me are making those decisions. But again, I didn't read any of the backup stuff about the, you know, this latest iteration of Captain Marvel by Geoff Johns. But I do know that Billy Batson is, you know, part of a foster family with a bunch of other foster kids, and he shares the power that he gained from the Wizard Shazam with his fellow foster brothers and sisters, and they become like the Shazam family. Some which have been seen before, like Mary Marvel and Captain Marvel Jr. But I think there are others in this group that maybe haven't seen before. And even though I didn't read that Geoff Johns backup stuff, and the thing is, I even had – they collected it all the backup stories from the Justice League issues. They collected it all in a trade and a hardcover, and I have the hardcover, and I just haven't had time to read it. I think it's still sealed in the plastic, and I just haven't made time to read it. So and Gary Frank was the artist for those backup stories, and if it wasn't for the fact that Gary Frank is busy doing Doomsday Clock, he would be drawing this series. He loves Shazam just as much as Geoff Johns, and they'd probably be doing it together if it wasn't for them working together on Doomsday Clock. So Dale Eaglesham's art is phenomenal. I love the art on this issue. He does have a similar style to Geoff Johns, Gary Frank rather, so it's a good fit. But that being said, you know, as good as Dale Eaglesham's art is on a regular basis, this is even above and beyond that. I feel like this is the best work that I've ever seen Dale Eaglesham do. It is just absolutely amazing. There's also a short backup story that gives kind of the origin of Mary Marvel. And when I say origin, it's how she came to be a part of the foster family. Like, why was she in the foster system in the first place? And I have a feeling that over the first, you know, 5 or 6 issues, we're going to get these little 6 or 8 page stories about each of the foster brothers and sisters to give us an idea of how they came to be in the foster system in the first place. And so it gives some context, and it gives some kind of backstory and some understanding of who these characters are. So even though that I wasn't caught up with the current iteration of Captain Marvel and his family, Johns does a good job of flashing back and giving us context through the dialogue between the characters, so you can understand what's going on, and you don't feel like, well, I can't read this series until I go back and read those Captain Marvel backup stories or Shazam backup stories that were in the Justice League. It's not necessary. This is absolutely incredible. The only negative thing that I'll say about it is it's already running late. They already pushed back the second issue, which was supposed to come out, this month. So the first issue, this number one issue, was supposed to come out last month in November. And then issue 2, which is a Christmas issue, was supposed to come out in December. And then issue 3 in January, and so on and so forth. Well, this one got pushed back, I think, a week or two. And then issue 2 got pushed back like 3 or 4 weeks. And now it's in January, which doesn't make sense with the Christmas cover. And so Geoff Johns usually is on time, but we have seen some of his things, you know, get later and later as the years have gone by. I know he was busy with all the DC movies and TV stuff for a while. He doesn't have that role anymore, and he's supposed to be concentrating on just the writing, so I wouldn't think it's necessarily on him. But based on the level of detail that both Dale Eaglesham and Gary Frank put in their respective books, Shazam and Doomsday Clock, you can kind of understand why this art is taking a little longer, maybe. So, but we all know that lateness can kill momentum on a book, and I don't know. I almost wish that they would have said, "Okay, let's wait till Dale has like 3 or 4 issues drawn before we start soliciting them and putting them out," because I'd hate to see this book, you know, go by the wayside quickly, you know, after only 3, 4, 5, 6 issues. You know, I want it to be around for a long time because it's really fun. And like I said, the art is spectacular. The color work by Michael Etier is phenomenal. So it really hits on all cylinders. I know you haven't had a chance to read it yet, Manny, but I'm curious when you do. We'll have to chat about your thoughts on it, because even without any context for me, with knowing the current situation of Shazam, it blew me away, and I loved it. And it's making me think, man, I really need to pull out that hardcover and check it out sooner than later. Maybe as soon as I get caught up on some past podcasts we're a little behind on. So anyway, what book do you have up next?
Oh, my next book is Batman 60, obviously from DC Comics, written by Tom King, art by Mikhail Janin and George Fornes, colors by Jordi Belair. And there's a lot going on in this book. First off, Gordon's done. We've seen this in the last few issues that he's kind of just been putting up with Batman and his shenanigans after what happened with his failed marriage or failed wedding, and then also not to mention Bane playing games with him now, mind games obviously, and now dealing with the Penguin. I mean, he's got a lot. He's got a lot of issues, and it is no more evident than issue 60 of Batman. He is going around beating everyone up left and right, trying to get the answer he's looking for. And if he can't find it, he's just going to beat you. And this is just a really emotionally broken Batman. Something that, we usually see him on the verge of getting this far and just kind of losing it a bit. But I think now, King has done a beautiful job at setting up these moments with what's happened since the very beginning with Bane, with Gotham Girl, with Catwoman, just so much. It's one way to metaphorically break the bat, not literally breaking his bat, but his spirit, his will, his mind, and I think issue 60 is a clear view of that. And then on another note, we have Alfred and taking care of Cobblepot, and he has a really interesting conversation with him about poetry. And we find out a little bit more about who Penny is, and I'll just leave that at that. But you get a sense of how much he really cared for Penny. He's crying the whole time and talking about how much he misses her and how much, what she meant to him. And just, and you get a feel that it was like, wow, there's quite a bit of humanity in Oswald left. And that was a good moment in the book. And then other than that, the only other thing in this book that I just really want to touch upon, because other than that, it needs to be read, I don't want to spoil it, is the artwork, which part of it is done by Janin, as always. But the other, but by Fornes, it's done kind of in that classic Batman look. Kind of like that. He's wearing like an Adam West style suit almost, with the really really short ears, and it just looks kind of cool. But I'm not sure if I really like it. But I've been seeing Batman drawn one way for so long that it's kind of cool to see this other look at him. Although I will say that the pages were. Those pages are colored a little bit too orangey for me, I'd say. but overall, a solid issue with the cool little. No, I'll just leave it at that. I can't say anymore. Solid issue. Can't wait for 61, 62, 63, and so on, because it's quite the story.
Yeah, I said it right from issue one. I like this better than Snyder's run, and that's saying something, because Snyder's run was, a masterpiece. So King has continued to live up to the hype, and Yeah, 60 was, it was brutal. I don't necessarily like the fact there's two artists in the book. I love Mikel Yanin's art. I'm a huge fan of him. I'm a huge fan of Jorge Fornes too. Like his work on Hot Lunch Special, for example, it's so visceral and realistic and just kind of, there's a realism to it that really grounds the work. And so I think that it's really, really well done. And I love his take on Batman. Like you said, it's kind of a throwback take. I'd almost think it's like almost like a golden age Batman, you know, with the shorter ears and doesn't really have much of a neck. And he's, you know, his shoulders are kind of up high and he's kind of stocky. And so, yeah, I really, really like it. But I don't feel like the art styles complement each other very well.
Oh no, they don't. They're really opposite.
Yeah. So that, and I usually don't like it when it's inconsistent like that. Pulled me out of the story a little bit. But yeah, it was a great issue. And the only other thing that I'll say, cause you know, we don't want to spoil anything, like Manny said, but man, that last page was like, wait, what?
Yeah. That's almost, I didn't want to touch any more upon it, but yeah. I was like, what? Yeah, that's what I was like, 61?
That was crazy. So, all right. Well, on to my next book. It's called Die. It's from writer Kieran Gillen. We've got art by Stephanie Hans. Letters are by Clayton Cowles, and designs, logo designs and such. The layout of the book is by Ryan Hughes. And I didn't know anything about this book. I didn't want to know anything about this book. I didn't read the solicitation. I just kind of, you know, heard some people talking about it. Kieran Gillen has a new book coming out. It's supposed to be really good. And Stephanie Hans is doing the art. And I was like, okay, that's enough for me. I so don't want to be spoiled. I don't even want to really know what the book is about. I want to go in kind of, you know, fresh, not having any expectations, not even really knowing what the premise of the story is, and kind of be surprised. And I thought, based on the name of the book, that it was going to be some kind of horror kind of book. And, you know, Die was going to be in reference to death. It's sort of that. It is a horror book in a way, but it's fantasy also. But it's also about a group of people who love to play role-playing games. And the role-playing, the RPG stuff gets a little too real for them. And so I don't want to say too much because I want you to be able to have an experience like I have when you read it and you're like, wait, what is this? And also, be sure, just like when I recommended to go out and pick up the Witches Halloween special that came out actually, I think, on Halloween by Scott Snyder. And Scott had a really great essay in the back of that talking about his relationship with one of his sons, and his son was – at the time Scott was writing the story, was having a lot of nightmares, and it forced Scott to think about some of his own fears and, you know, things like that. And it was really great. That essay by the writer of the one shot, Scott Snyder, gave so much context to the story. Well, Kieran Gillen has a really great essay in the back of Die Number One that does the same thing. Not only does it give context and kind of enrich the story and help explain where he got the idea, why he needed to do it, it's also a real insight into kind of Kieran's voice, and you can kind of have an idea of how important this story is to him. So it really blew me away. The quality, the premise of the idea, the things he wants to explore, I can completely relate to. And I think a lot of readers of a certain age will be able to relate to it as well. So, I mean, again, I didn't have expectations in terms of kind of having an idea of what the story was about or how it was going to play out or how he's going to flesh out any ideas, because I purposely kept the blinders on. I did have high expectations based on the fact that it's Kieran Gillen, who's an incredibly talented writer, and Stephanie Hans, who's an amazing artist. I'm like, okay, well, this is going to be good. Any expectations I had of their talent and how good this would be were completely blown away. This so far surpassed anything I possibly could have imagined. And it's just so, so good. You absolutely, it's a must buy. You absolutely have to pick up this book and read it. And it, yeah, it is just ridiculously, ridiculously good. So I don't even know if it was on your radar at all, Manny. And I know usually I give a little more context and a little more idea of what the story is about. But I, for this one, I really think you need to read it for yourself. But again, I don't know if it was on your radar at all, Manny, but you need to check this book out, man. It's really going to blow you away.
Yeah, sounds like it. If you're that excited about
it
must be pretty good.
Yeah, it was awesome completely. All right, what do you have up next?
Up next, I have another DC book, Green Arrow 47 by Julie Benson and Shauna Benson, with art by German Peralta and colors by John Kalitz. And this is the Citizen's Arrest finale. I really like the Benson's run on Green Arrow. It's really, just like most of the stories that have been since Rebirth, with Percy, really up his alley, not nothing too crazy. I mean, Citizen's Arrest has been, as we learned a couple of issues ago, it's a local cop gone bad, I guess you can say. And he's trying to take out the 1% that have, quote unquote, are criminals in his view, which actually he has reasons to call them criminals. But he's trying to execute them publicly. And as we saw last issue, he got his hands on Oliver Queen. This issue is him putting him on trial in front of the world, because he takes over a Queen satellite and all the feeds so that they can see the quote unquote trial of Oliver Queen. Now, what I really like about this issue is the message that it sends. I'm going to say what I like about it, kind of out of context, but if I put it in context, it kind of gives away some of the story. But the message of kind of, for lack of a better term, just to be quick, it's power to the people, that you have, the people have the power to really be able to make tap change to affect others around them by getting involved, whether it's in your city, whether it's in elections, whether it's in peaceful protests or just volunteering. You know, it's not just about complaining. It's not just about trying to point the finger of who is to blame for what. But it's more of empowering yourself to make a change, to make a difference in your community, to make the entire, your town, your city, your state, whatever, a better place. And the way they wrapped that message around in this issue was done beautifully. And to be honest, I'm probably going to use a couple of these pages going forward in my town to show it to people and to say, hey, look at this, check out this message. And so kudos to them for the way that they laid out this issue. It's done really, really well. And they have a little bit more of the Black Canary Oliver relationship, which I like, because I just always think they should belong together. Like, I hate any time that they separate them. And lately they've been together, so I've loved it. And so, yeah, it's a good wrap to this arc, and I look forward to what's coming up next.
Yeah, I'm really disappointed that the Benson sisters aren't going to be on Green Arrow anymore. In fact, they're not doing any comics work right now. I do hope that they got to finish on their terms, because it did feel like it needed like maybe one more issue. I think maybe they would have wanted to end on 48, and that's just my own personal belief. I have, you know, I didn't ask Julie or Shauna about that, if that were the case. But I do hope that they come back at some point, because I think that they have a voice that's really needed in comics. It's a bit unique. And I think this issue is a perfect example, of what they can bring. They're, you know, they bring some humor, they bring some perspective, they bring a good message. And, I, like you said, with Black Canary and Oliver together, I love the way they write their relationship. I think they do a great job of making them seem perfect for each other, which is, you know, the case when it comes to Black Canary and Green Arrow. It's like peanut butter and jelly, just goes together. So yeah, I'm really going to miss their, the fact that they don't have a monthly book coming out anymore. Cause Green Arrow's been really great. So, Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing are coming on the book. And they did a couple of the issues in between the Percy and the Benson Sisters run, and they were okay. So I guess we'll see, what comes of that. So yeah, end of an era in a way. Hopefully more to come from the Benson Sisters. All right, my next book up is Martian Manhunter. This is written by Steve Orlando with art by Riley Rosmo. We've got colors by Yvonne Placencia, letters by Darren Bennett. Got a couple covers. Riley Rosmo does a regular cover, and then there's a Joshua Middleton variant. So I've really been excited for this book, Martian Manhunter, by Steve Orlando. Steve Orlando is one of my favorite writers. He always loves to really bring on the second tier characters and the more obscure characters of the DCU and give them a chance to shine. Martian Manhunter, for as long as he's been around, for having been a founding member of the Justice League, he just doesn't get the love or the name recognition. It's ridiculous, right? If you look at the other, and now I'm not talking about Cyborg, I'm not talking about the new 52 Justice League, I'm talking about the original Justice League, right? So we have Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, Aquaman, Flash, Green Lantern, Martian Manhunter. Those are your seven, right? I would argue of those seven, six of the seven are like icons known worldwide. And Martian Manhunter is the one that's left out. I don't understand. Like, why? Is it because he's not human? Is it because he has green skin? Are we really being that prejudiced? So it just doesn't really make sense. And there's been a few great Martian Manhunter series over the years. The John Ostrander one is really the one that comes to mind. But other than that, I don't really think there's a series that you would consider, okay, this is a defining run of Martian Manhunter. So that being said, I did hear that one of the things that perhaps Steve was going to do was we were going to get a lot of flashback time to when the Martian Manhunter, John Jones, was still on Mars, and that perhaps he was going to tell a story of Martian Manhunter not quite being the hero that we thought he was. You know, maybe he was not a hero on Mars, and then based on the tragedy of Mars being, you know, his the race of Martians being killed, that he kind of turned over a new leaf and all that. And I wasn't like that idea didn't thrill me, right? Like, I love the idea of thinking of John Jones, whether on Earth or Mars, as always being a hero. But when you think about it that way, it's a lot more boring, you know, characters and real life, you know, people that we know. Nobody's 100% good. Nobody's 100% bad. There's layers and there's complexity and everything. So I think ultimately it will be a much more interesting story, and maybe it can make John Jones more relatable. I'm not sure. The jury's still out on that part of the story. The part of the story, and you know, that's flashback stuff. The part of the story that's like set in present day on Earth with John as a detective, it feels very police procedural to me, with John and his partner investigating a crime. And there's CSI there, and there's a lot of police lingo and all that kind of stuff. And I imagine Steve probably had to do a lot of research for that. And that part I really enjoyed. I loved it. You know, it was like watching an episode of CSI. And yeah, I do think I'm going to enjoy this this series overall. I'm not a fan of Riley Rosmo's art style. I've said that before. I talked about it when we covered the Monster Night of the Monster Men arc in the Batman books. And I also, I think I talked about it when we covered that DC book that Rosmo did not too long ago about the guy who used to be like a adventurer type guy. You know which one I'm talking about, Manny?
Yeah, he was like bedridden for a while.
Yeah.
What was it called?
Yeah.
Josh Williamson, right?
Yeah, Joshua Williamson wrote it. Yeah, that's right.
I can think of everything about the book but the title.
Yeah. Anyway, I wanted to read that because Joshua Williamson, but I just – I didn't end up reading it, and part of the reason was just the art style wasn't – but that being said, I think the art, as much as I don't care that much for Riley Rossmo's style, I think the art does suit the story that him and Steve are telling, because Martians are shapeshifters, and Riley's art style is kind of fluid, and it makes sense for alien shapeshifters, especially when you read the book. So I do recommend picking up Martian Manhunter 1. You'll know right away just based on the tone and the feel and the look of the first issue whether or not you want to be in for the ride or not. That's my prediction. So
it was called Deathbed.
Deathbed. There you go. Thank you. That was going to keep me up tonight. All right. What do you have up next?
I have Red Hood and the Outlaws. Oh, sorry. I keep
just
calling
Red
it
Hood,
that.
Right?
Red Hood Outlaw number 29.
Yeah, there you go.
Written by Scott Liddell. Art and cover were done by Pete Woods. Colors by Rex Locus. And it's really has a Red Hood right still in that small town. Fighting these giant creatures that we find out they're called Mondays. Well, that's what they're calling them because they're being somehow made with the same genes from Solomon Grundy or at DNA. And, we saw last issue that, Kate Kane showed up, aka Batwoman, to kind of help him out. I think she was looking into something similar. So there's a lot of fighting. With these characters and just kind of, setting up to them looking for some celerity. And, actually, I don't really feel like there's too much to say about this book because it just felt like it didn't feel like much happened other than they just got a little closer to finding them. It was a lot of action. The action sequences, in the mansion to where Red Hood goes in to investigate was really freaking cool. Just, I mean, classic badass Red Hood, almost like kind of Western style where, you know, he shoots first, asks questions later. Well, he doesn't, he asks quite a few questions, but for every threat that the villains had for him, he had answered it 20 minutes ago. That's what it seemed like. So it was really cool to see him being such a badass. It has a very classic, cliche, him walking away from an explosion, but it looks really cool. So I'm not gonna fault them for it. So, I look forward to what's coming up next, but this issue, it was kind of like, let's just get through it. Then that's really how it felt, especially now that he's kind of more off on his own without the team of Artemis and like Bizarro. It's been a little bit duller, but I kind of wanted to move along a little bit more.
All right. On to my next, title here. It is Prodigy. Number one, this is from Mark Millar with art by Rafael Albuquerque, colors by the imitable Marcelo Maiello, letters by Pete Doherty. We've got a regular cover by Albuquerque and then a variant cover by Frank Quitely. So this story had me intrigued when I heard about it. It's basically like the world's smartest guy, like the universe's smartest guy. I mean, this guy at 11 years old is a prodigy, and it's not just the fact that he's super intelligent. He learns so fast, like he can watch people play sports on TV and like study their moves and then go and imitate them and be good at sports.
Okay, so, like Kind of like Archer.
Yeah, kind of like Archer, right? So if he gets beat up by some bullies at his school, he just goes and watches some Jean-Claude Van Damme and some Bruce Lee and some Jackie Chan. And then he goes back, you know, watches the stuff over the weekend, and he goes back on Monday and he kicks all their asses. So, so it's a story of him, and something happens in the world where his unique talents are needed more than ever. And although it's a dangerous threat to the planet, for him, it's exciting. It's fun, right? Because it's finally a challenge, because everything comes so easy to him. So it's – all that being said, as enjoyable and as fun as it is and over the top as it is, it's like if you gave me this book and I didn't have any idea, like any – credits on it, and somebody just gave me this title and said, read this and then tell me who you think the writer is, I would read it, and probably not even three or four pages in, I'd say it's Mark Millar, because it's just, it's what he does, right? And it's kind of like, yeah, we've been down this road before. It's fun, but been down this road before. Like, you know, Millar, so many times he's writing stories about scientists that are super smart, and they, you know, like Chrononauts is another one. Oh, look at these, you know, really smart scientists, and one's irreverent and one's more straight-laced, and they're really, really smart, and they can invent time travel, you know? And it's like, how many times can you tell the same sort of story with the fact that, hey, look, it's a really smart guy. It's a really smart guy. It's really smart. So, and it just has, you know, the dialogue and the way people speak, and there's sort of an arrogance to his characters, especially his main characters. And so if I had any complaint about it, it's a little paint by numbers. It doesn't really feel like Millar is really kind of challenging himself to kind of grow at this point. I mean, I guess he doesn't really need to. His stuff's so popular. You know, he's got a first look deal with Netflix, where whenever he comes up with a comic like idea or whatever, it's automatically optioned in Netflix. They have the option to you know, to have first rights to make a movie, a Netflix movie or a Netflix series or anything out of it. So it's pretty obvious, because when you look at this book, there are advertisements in it for Netflix, including an advertisement for Daredevil season 3, which is interesting for a couple of reasons. Partly because the show's been canceled, and also the fact that it's a Marvel, it's a Image book with a Marvel ad in it, which is just kind of weird. So, I will say that the artwork from Rafael Albuquerque is pretty much the cleanest artwork I've ever seen Albuquerque do. I am most familiar with Rafael Albuquerque's work from the American Vampire series that he does with Scott Snyder. And in that series, the art there is a lot more – it's not quite as neat. It's a lot more sketchy. And it's just because of the style of the book, you know, the fact that it's a horror book. So here I prefer this style of art from Albuquerque a lot more. And as much as I'm kind of complaining about it being kind of paint by the numbers for Mark Millar, I am planning on picking up the next issue, because the ideas are fun, as much as they may be sort of a pastiche or a cliche for Millar himself. Yeah, it is fun. It is an entertaining read. So that is Prodigy number one. All right, what do you have up next, Manny?
My next book is from Vertigo. It is Border Town number four. Number four. And this one, it is written by one of the creators on here. Just had him.
Yeah, DC's been putting the creators at the end a lot lately. It's really quite annoying.
Okay, so it is written by Eric M. Esquivel, with art by Ramon Villalobos, and cover as well by Ramon Villalobos. Been a really, really good series. I know it's for mature readers, but my daughter caught me reading it, and she had a lot of questions as it was going through, because of all the monsters, and so we ended up having quite a lot about Mexican mythology and they're kind of the legendary monsters and who they are because she saw me reading this book. But in this issue, it moves the story along quite a bit. I mean, the first three books did a really good job at kind of just setting up the world, setting up the town. And so this one kind of, I feel like it just wraps that up. So it looks at Julieta and her past, how her parents, how they met, how they worked their way out of Mexico and had to cross illegally. And then the problem she had going into school, and it just kind of looks in her past and then all the struggles that she has had as an illegal immigrant, not really being able to do much. And now at the school she's in, they all have to meet in the cafeteria, or I was not in the cafeteria, in the gymnasium for a rally. It's a school safety rally with Sheriff Arnie Hernandez, a sheriff who's sold out to his own people. He's half Mexican, half Italian, but he does his best to pretend like he's 100% American. And he says things like, you can keep your school safe if you suspect that someone in your class is an illegal alien. And then it has a couple of boxes of kind of his past and setting up who this character is. It says, this guy's so extreme that a little girl once asked him to get a cat out of a tree. He ended up asking for her papers, ended up deporting the little girl's parents, the little girl, and the cat. I was like, what? And so, just things like that. And so it kind of had some humor in it. But now the group of kids, they're going back to the Botanica, where they have the Chupacabras creature that they found. And they're kind of starting to unravel the mysteries of where it came from and what the border has to do with all of this and the creature and the border keeper, who I will, Mictlantecuhtli, I think I said it right, and I'm not going to try it again. So deal with it. so they're going to go out and investigate. And what they find out there is a lot more trouble. So things are going to definitely escalate going forward. But another good issue. I really like it. Book speaks to me, obviously, because I'm Hispanic, I'm Mexican. So you see funny things like the Chupacabras loves hot Cheetos and things like that. And it talks about how hard my parents worked to get here, all for me to complain that I can't get the damn Wi-Fi to work and things like that. So, good book. Love it. Really recommend it. And actually, I think I might be seeing Ramon Villalobos soon because Stockton Con's going to have a winter show in January, and he did the cover again, I think, for their program. He always does it. I've seen him a few times at the traditional Stockton Con in August, but now they're adding a winter show, and so I look forward to talking to him about this book.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of good things. I haven't read it myself. I know the first issue sold out like immediately. I think it sold out before it even got released. So I definitely need to check it out. Doesn't Ramon live in Stockton or like up?
He's a local guy. Kind of like Liam's also out there too.
Yeah, he's in Walnut Creek. So
yeah, he's gonna be at a couple of shows, the local shows out here soon. So I'm gonna probably head down up north for a couple of hours.
Well, I have one more title that I want to talk about. It's Blackbird from writer Sam Humphries. We have art by Jen Bartel, layout art by Paul Renwand, colors by Triona Farrell, letters by Jody Wynn, designed by Dylan Todd, main cover by Jen Bartel, and a variant cover by Loish, L-O-I-S-H. So if you haven't been reading Blackbird, it's basically the story of a girl who discovers that she somehow can see magic creatures. and she's not sure why or how. There's an earthquake one night, and her sister kind of run out of the house, and they see some magic creatures. And ever since that moment, her life is profoundly different. She's so affected by it, even though she can't necessarily get anyone to believe her. So all her life, she's been trying to find the answers, and she's been kind of a screw up. And then her mother dies, and her father kind of loses it, and her sister are sort of out on their own. And her sister manages to kind of get her life together and sort of be successful, whereas she's unable to really move past it because she's always thinking about the fact that she lost her mother, right? She's always the kid who lost her mother. And so when her sister, when all of a sudden she's confronted one night with the fact that the magic really is real, and she's like looked on the internet and found out all about these magic wielders, and she knows like all their names and all the different clans, and spells look like gems to them. And instead of being called wizards or witches, they're called paragons. And yeah, she learns all this stuff. And so she's kind of versed in the world, and she can see the world, but she doesn't know why. And we don't know why. Like, we don't even know why some people are born with the ability to wield magic and to see magic, and some aren't. But clearly, she has a lot of power, even though we don't know why. Well, this issue sort of answers that question, and it answers it in a way that you don't really see coming. But you know, anybody who's lost a parent, I think, can really relate to the feelings that the two sisters have in this book. And it's such a beautifully drawn book too. Like, Jen Bartel has a very sort of unique style, and between that and the very primary bright colors of Triona Farrell, a lot of blues, a lot of pinks and purples. So the book has a certain feel to it that's very recognizable, and the colors really suit the kind of story that's being told. And so in that way, the book kind of fires on all cylinders. And Sam Humphries is a really good writer, and the fact that he is able to make these characters so relatable in such a fantastical world is really a credit to Sam as a writer. And I know things like anxiety and emotions and, you know, depression, mental illness, things like that, they really interest Sam. He's very like sensitive, and to those, you know, people that deal with that stuff, and he wants to give it a voice. And so I think he comes to it with a certain level of like sensitivity and emotionality that really helps the story to feel grounded with these characters. And so much like Batman 60 this week, this issue has a huge last page twist that's like a kind of a holy crap twist, just like Batman. Like, wait, what just happened? And so, yeah, it was a great cliffhanger to end on. And I'm highly anticipating issue 4. Like, issue 1 was really great. Issue 2, I feel like, was a bit of a, you know, again, I've talked about this a lot of times on the podcast. With story, you need, you know, issues that are really fast paced and peaks, and then you need valleys, you need troughs, right? Where maybe an issue isn't quite as exciting, or it doesn't move the story forward, you know, a whole lot, or whatever it might be. Because if you don't have issues where the story beats are a little softer, then how can you have the highs without the lows, right? So it's the same kind of thing. So issue two seemed like it was a bit more of a down issue, but now with issue three, we've reached new heights. It's way better than issue one is. And yeah, what happens on the last page is so like, holy crap. And Nina's reaction to it, it really gets you, it really hits you. And you're like, wow, I can't wait to read the next issue. And the other thing that I'll say about Nina as a character is, despite her kind of being a screw up after having lost her mom, she has at times pulled herself up by her bootstraps, so to speak, and showed that there's really a strength in there. So she does have competence, and it looks like she can be a really great magic wielder. It seems like she has a lot of natural ability there. So it's no surprise. And one thing I didn't mention was in the first issue, her sister Marissa, the one that was, you know, sort of successful after their mom died, or at least had the appearance of being successful, she was kidnapped by a quote unquote demon, some kind of magical entity. And it's been kind of what's been driving Nina to get some more firsthand practical knowledge of this world of magic, because she wants to rescue her sister. Because one of the last things that her mom told her, and one of the things that her mom always told her, is that the girls in their family will always stick together. So Nina's trying to rescue Marissa to honor that memory. So again, it's a really emotional book. It's a beautiful book to look at. And all of a sudden, with the twist at the end of issue three, it's like, I can't wait to see what happens next. It's a gorgeous book. Probably the best colored book on the stands right now, but certainly beautiful art from Jen Bartel as well. But I gotta give a shout out to Triona Farrell for her color work in this one. It's absolutely amazing. So I think that's it for the books that we're going to talk about in depth. I do want to give a quick rundown of some of the other titles coming out today that you may want to be on the lookout for, because there's quite a few other titles that I actually read. But, you know, I already talked about six of them, so I couldn't talk about everything. And, you know, some of them we'll cover on some other spotlights and such, like Justice League 13. So Aftershock has a few titles out today. Clan Killers number 5 from Sean Lewis, Dark Ark number 12 from Cullen Bunn, Her Infernal Descent number 5, I believe that wraps up that series, and then also Moth and Whisper number 4 from Ted Anderson and oh my god, I'm drawing a blank, and Jen Hickman. That was I have read Moth and Whisper number 4. It was excellent, really really good. Over at Ahoy Comics, Wrong Earth number 4, which is a really interesting title. It's been selling out. I just saw that issue 5 has sold more copies, or as there's more copies of issue 5 pre-ordered than they sold of issue 1, which that just doesn't happen, right? Issue 1 is the big seller, and then things drop off to the point of the series gets canceled and they relaunch with another number one. So any comic that climbs is the exception rather than the rule. So you probably owe it to yourself to pick that up and see what all the buzz is about. Over at DC, we talked about a lot of these books, but in addition to the ones we did talk about, I'll mention Doomsday Clock number 8 from Geoff Johns and Gary Frank. We've also got Harley Quinn number 55, Justice League number 13, which is a Legion of Doom issue that we'll be talking about on the Justice League Spotlight coming up real soon. Over at Image, again, we talked about a lot of these books, but I do want to mention Freeze number 1 from Top Cow. And that's a premise that's really, really interesting to me. I've read the first issue. It was absolutely spectacular, and I'll also say about that that issue that we had the creative team of Philip Seve and Dan Wickline on the podcast not too long ago to talk about Freeze, and it's a really really good book, and I'll be covering that in depth, completely spoiler filled episode, not tomorrow's podcast, but next week's Top Cow. That way you've got a full week to read it. No excuse not to have checked it out before you listen to the next podcast of Top Cow. Also, Walking Dead number 186. I can't believe Walking Dead's approaching issue 200. That's crazy. As well as Wicked and the Divine number 40. And that's by Kieran Gillen, who I just gave a lot of praise to for his Die number one. That one's winding up. That series is coming to an end, Wicked and the Divine. I don't know if issue 40 is the last issue. I don't think it is. I think there's a few more, but it is coming to a close. Over at Marvel, we've got a couple of these Defenders titles. I think there's a new Defender series coming out, but they're starting with a bunch of one shots. And like, these are classic Defenders members. So, and in fact, I think maybe even the founding members, because I think there were four founding members. So this week we've got Defenders Immortal Hulk number one and Defenders Namor number one. And I think next week it's Defenders Doctor Strange number one and Defenders Silver Surfer number one. So keep your eyes out for those if you're a big Defenders fan. We also have from the incredibly talented Brian Edward Hill, Killmonger number one. And one thing you'll notice right away about Killmonger is now that the Black Panther movie has come out and done wildly successful, you know, there's a Shuri title now, and now we're getting a Killmonger title. And not only are we getting a Killmonger title, but if you look at the way Killmonger is drawn, it's Michael B. Jordan, which that's not what Killmonger ever looked like before, like not even close. So, anyway, take that as you will. But it's a 5-issue limited series and it's Brian Edward Hill. So, I don't know. I'm kind of torn on whether I'm going to check that out or not. I'm a huge fan of Brian Edward Hill, but I don't really have much interest in Black Panther or Killmonger. Haven't seen the movie. So, I don't know if I'll pick that up or not. Marvel Knights 20th anniversary number 3, is out tomorrow or today as well. Merry X-Men Holiday Special number 1. It's $4.99, and I want to say that it's 25 stories, 25 one-page stories. So one for each month of December leading up till Christmas. So it's got a ton of creators, like so many creators that Jordan White, the editor of the X-Men books over at Marvel, reached out to so many creators and said, hey, would you like to tell a one-page story, Christmas-themed or holiday-themed, to go in the X-Men special? And he got 25 people to take him up on it. So I'm really looking forward to checking that out. Also, Uncanny X-Men number 4, the X-Men Disassembled weekly storyline, marches on with its fourth issue. And Winter Soldier number 1 from Kyle Higgins and Rod Reese. Really, really excited to see Kyle and Rod work together again, and really excited to see Kyle get to work on one of his favorite characters of all time, Winter Soldier. His Dead Hand series that recently wrapped up from Image was so amazing that I can't wait for more Cold War spy type stories from Kyle, and I think Winter Soldier will definitely be that. And finally from Marvel, X-Men The Exterminated number 1, all about the fallout of the Extermination series. What's interesting about this is the last issue of that miniseries, Extermination, issue number 5, got pushed back from the end of November to the middle of December. And so now you've got the follow-up one-shot, The Exterminated, coming out before the end of the series. So typical Marvel fashion there, bringing back some bad habits that I had hoped they had put behind him. I think if you push back Extermination, then push back The Exterminated. Don't release it and have the end of Extermination ruined, although they have come out and said, oh, The Exterminated doesn't ruin the end of Extermination. Well, you solicited The Exterminated as the epilogue to Extermination, so I don't know how it doesn't spoil. So anyway, I'm sure they'll figure it out. And finally, the last book I'll mention from Valiant Entertainment, we have Ninja K number 14, final issue of that series. I hate to see that one come to an end, because it's been a whole heck of a lot of fun seeing Christos Gage write Ninjak. And as amazing as the series has been, though, the Roberto Della Torre art on the last few issues hasn't worked for me at all. And I think it's even gotten worse in this final issue. But I am sad to see it end because next to Bloodshot, Ninjak is my favorite Valiant character. So I hope he's not gone for too long. Anything that you're looking forward to, Manny, that I did not mention?
No, actually, you know what? Just curious, because I don't think you mentioned it, but I was pretty sure that you were pretty high on Curse of Brimstone.
Oh yeah, I didn't. It's okay. It's I feel like it's kind of. It's not that it's dropped off, but it also hasn't really progressed. It's kind of the story's kind of been flat, and I'm a few issues behind on it. So okay. That's why I haven't didn't mention it.
Oh, okay, because I was like, oh, and then also, you had tweeted about number 9, I think, but not sure if you said it anything about Immortal Hulk, which is
the best title Marvel's putting out. Yeah, I forgot that was coming out actually. So yeah, Al Ewing embracing the horror roots of Hulk, and is there an issue that comes out tomorrow?
It says Immortal Hulk 10.
Oh, that's right. It's the one with the Alex Ross cover where the Hulk is like staring at this door, that like mirror looking type door. So based on his fight with the Absorbing Man in 9, I'm really excited to see where it goes from here. We may finally learn the identity of this like mysterious entity, evil malevolence that's been that infected Walter Lankowski. And then when the Hulk absorbed the gamma radiation from Walter, he took that into himself. And then in turn, when the Absorbing Man absorbed gamma radiation from the Hulk, the Absorbing Man ended up with the entity, and it sort of hatched, him. Did you read 9?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
So you saw that visual at the end where Absorbing Man was like literally split in half. He kind of looked like, he kind of looked like what the T-1000 looked like in Terminator at the end when they shot it with the grenade, where it was just all, that's how the Absorbing Man looked. So
that's actually exactly what I thought of when I saw that. So yeah, we're on the same page there.
Yeah. Thanks for pointing that out. I can't believe I forgot to mention Immortal Hulk. Yeah. Really, really great title. Anything else I missed?
No, everything else we've either covered, or like you said, we're going to cover soon. So, a lot of books, and it just, I always shake my head. I'm kind of biased too, but every week it's like Marvel's like number one, number one, number one, yeah. Number one, number one. It's like,
yeah, definitely.
I just wonder how long they're going to last. So,
all right. Well, what about book of the week?
That's really tough.
Yeah, you're telling me.
because now I really want to read Die first before I make that decision. And
well, obviously it's based on, you know, what you've read so far.
Based on what I've read so far, it's still hard. In the words of Michael Scott, that's what she said. I'm gonna have to, you know what, just because I've just really enjoyed it so far, Border Town number 4 is my book of the week.
All right, that's a good pick. You know what I just realized as I'm asking about your book of the week is I completely forgot to mention another title from Image that is a must buy, and it's Self-Made number 1 from Matt Groom and artist Eduardo Ferragato. And yesterday's podcast on Tuesday, I had Matt on. He actually lives in Australia. So big shout out to Matt for getting up super early, 6 a.m. his time, before he went into his day job to talk with me about Self-Made. And that's it's got some similarities to Die in a way. It's really, really good. So even though I didn't cover it on this podcast, I've done it before where I've given my book of the week to something I didn't actually cover. I think I've given book of the week to Action Comics before when I waited to cover an Action Comics issue for the Superman Sunday. So I want to call out Self-Made as my book of the week, except I also, I mean, the Shazam, I got, that was so good. But then Die number one was amazing.
It's a good week.
And you know, the twist at the end of Blackbird, I have to give some consideration to. So ultimately, I'm going to give an honorable mention to Shazam and Blackbird number three. Like they're really, really close. But there's no way I'm going to go for more than two books because I'll cheat and I'll give my book of the week as a tie to both Self-Made and to Die number one. I cannot not give a shout out to both those books because they're both completely amazing. Similar in a way, both from Image, both deal with kind of alternate realities in a way, alternate worlds. And yeah, I think they're both spectacular. So those are my co-books of the week. All right. Well, thanks for joining us, everybody. Please tell your friends about us. Subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms, as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, please check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to check out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.